This episode of The Lou Rockwell Show is sponsored by...
Is the growth of government driving you crazy? Is it frustrating you that you can't do anything about it? Now you can. Join the Free State Project. Move to New Hampshire and get active with other liberty activists who have already slowed the growth of government in New Hampshire. Go to freestateproject.org.
This is The Lou Rockwell Show.
Our first guest... is the founder of the Ludwig von Mises Institute, was Ron Paul's first chief of staff on Capitol Hill, one of Ron Paul's oldest, longest, and most trusted advisors. We owe so much to this man. Ladies and gentlemen, please wear a warm round of applause for Lou Rockwell.
Sure is great to be here among all the Paulians, and today I'm going to talk about a subject that, to my knowledge, has never been talked about at any Ron Paul function in all the many years that Ron has been a public figure, and that's Ron Paul. Now, when he asked me what I'm going to talk about today, that's what I told him, and he said, with this long pause, and he said, you know, Lou, these events are not talked by me. Well, Ron...
Can you get back on board?
First, I'll mention Ron's family. You know, great people come from great families. And I think sort of as the Paul family at one end of a spectrum, and maybe the Bush family. The first Paul to come to this country from Germany came to escape the draft. He avoided the draft of the German Kaiser in the 19th century. Came to this country seeking freedom. Established a great family. I had the honor of knowing Ron's parents. Ron's dad ran a dairy in Pennsylvania, and Ron was credited not only with teaching him about the value of work, the value of integrity, but he was the first one to talk to him about the importance of sound money. And his dad said that inflation, what the Federal Reserve does, is the equivalent of watering the milk. And to a dairy man, that's about the worst thing possible to do. So Ron grew up in Pennsylvania. He was a statewide track champion in a number of events. Tremendous athlete. In fact, I'm told by people in Pennsylvania that who knew him, that had he not had knee injuries in college, that he could have gone on to a professional career, or at least a semi-career. He was that good at baseball. And I'll skip ahead just a moment. One of the great things when I got a chance to work for Ron to be at the annual congressional ball game. And you may have seen the picture on Ron's site of him in the Astros uniform. He looked like he's just stepped off the Astros team. And indeed, when he got up to bat, the Democrats in those days had a former professional league, like maybe the pitcher, pitching for him. He was very difficult to hit. And he threw it over the plate, and Ron hit a home run out of the park. He later said that it's a good thing it was a home run because he had a little bit of trouble getting around the bases. Throw him out of it, hadn't it? So he grew up with a great family. He has four brothers, all of whom in turn, you know, are important men, ministers. I don't know if Wayne Paul, his brother Wayne, is here, but would be a barbecue if he's not. Wayne is CPA and heroic champion against some very tough health circumstances. Yeah. Heroic champion of the rights of private property against federal prosecutors and the IRS right now, especially in the trial in Las Vegas, you may have read about, where a businessman paying his workers with $50 and $1 gold and silver coins, which the U.S. Mint. And Wayne explained to the jury that there's nothing in the government laws about these going for fair market value. They are $50 and they're $1. And so none of the workers, of course, earned enough to have to pay taxes. According to that word. So the defense, you might not be surprised, pretty upset. But Wayne is typical of the Paul family. It's not only Ron. I mean, these boys grew up to be important men in all their fields of endeavor. And it's a tribute. Ron is not only a tribute to himself, he definitely is that, to his partner, his wife Carol, his girlfriend in high school, and his wife for more than 50 years. But to his parents, and the great long line of Paul's going back, something like the Bush family, George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, Senator Prescott Bush, going back even further, all of them what Murray Rothbard called the loyal adherents of the Rockefeller World Empire, and people who think nothing of starting wars, looting citizens, doing any kind of crime to enhance their own power and their own financial position. Exact opposite of the Paul family. The mic just came on. You know, today is August 15th and the anniversary of August 15th, 1971, the evil day when Richard Nixon post-pressing wage controls and closed the gold window, that is, cut the final tie between the dollar and gold, leading to a apparently discretionary monetary policy. The baddest things were before that, it came with a chart from August 1571. So Ron became a physician, as you know. He was always a very successful student. Worked his way through high school, always working in his dad's dairy. Worked in college. As a member of a fraternity, he was in charge of all the food service. He made sure the food was cooked and bought. And he also worked in the bookstore, 4-0 student, Duke Medical School. And it was at Duke Medical School, wonderfully enough, that he first encountered the Austrian economist. He started reading at Hayek and Mises and Murray Rothbard, and Setholz, Henry Hazlitt, all men he would later meet and become friends with and colleagues of and carry on with. So he got out, he was a very successful doctor. One of his early opponents, Bob Gammage, who lost to him, said, you know, we just didn't take him seriously. I didn't realize that he had delivered half the babies in Brazoria County. He said, literally, because there were only two obstetricians at that time. He said, everywhere I went, people were, you know, either delivered by Ron or had their children delivered by Ron. There was no way they were voting for anybody else. So Ron's a successful doctor. He, like, I can remember being in the College Square of Hillsdale, Michigan, when I heard the Nixon news, it was like a bolt of lightning. And me and Ron had exactly the same feeling. Ron's case, it made him decide he was going to be a public official. He was going to at least try to speak out for these ideas in an election. He was going to run for Congress. And as he often tells the story, Carol said, you know, that's a terrible idea, you know, I don't want you going to Washington. He said, I'm not going to win. No way anybody's going to elect me with these ideas. But you know, I'm going to explain the statement. He's a natural born politician. And by that I mean not that he's a liar or a demagogue, but it was nothing for him to wear out 4 and 5 pairs of shoes walking neighborhoods when he was running in those early elections. And he loves meeting people, he loves teaching the ideas of liberty, and that he was he was a great candidate. So the first time he ran, he did not win, and he won in a special election in 1976. The Democratic Walker Democrat was the first Republican congressman from second district, and he was the first Republican congressman. The longtime Democrat was appointed to a federal job on the Maritime Commission, like the bribe must have been more lucrative there than as a congressman. So he was happy to go. So Ron won, and to everybody's huge surprise, and because, as I mentioned, the shoe leather business, he won that election. The Democrats were surprised, the Republicans were surprised. So the Democrats determined they were going to get him next time. When the special election was only elected in March, he had to run again in November. And the Democrats were determined to get him, and they did get him. And they stole the election exactly like something out of Chicago. I mean, we had people, thousands of alleged people, quote unquote people, who were not on the roll, but who had voted from gas stations. There was even one person who voted from the Houston Astrodome as their residence. Public libraries, empty lots. So we had evidence of thousands of bad votes. Ron only lost by a couple hundred, and he took this to Congress, and Tip O'Neill, of course, just laughed him out of town. And I remember one of the congressmen who was involved in that, Democratic congressman, later was caught in the Afghan scandal. One from remembers that, but a bunch of crooked congressmen were caught. And I always, this guy who was particularly against Ron, I remember he was filmed taking a bribe from what he thought was a Saudi Arabian prince, and he was putting $100,000 in a lot, even $100 bills, into his pockets of his suit and clothing. And he looks at the Saudi Arabian prince and also at the camera, and he says, "Does it show?" It showed. It showed in his eyes and his face and his soul. To run again, you know, never daunted. Decided he ran again. He won. I had the honor of going with him to Washington and working for him. And I can tell many stories, but they discovered that they had an unusual guy to deal with.
Yay!
I remember being there one night when he was in his office, I'm in the outer office, and I get a call. It's the White House calling from Ronald Reagan. I didn't talk to Reagan. Reagan was calling from Ron. He's calling, you know, despite what you might hear about the myths, Ronald Reagan was not calling Ron to say, congratulate him on opposing spending and taxing. He wasn't calling to get his advice or to enlist his help in those causes. No, he was calling him to vote for spending. In this case, it was one of the B bombers, I don't know, B-1, B-2, the widow killer, whatever those planes are. One of these weapons that only is used in aggression, only is used to bomb other countries, nothing to do with defense. There were huge deficits at that time, huge deficits. Reagan's first deficit was $100 million. I think that was pretty great. Of course, Ron was always firing his deficits. And Reagan is all, so these things always happen, offer you good things if you go along and bad things if you don't go along. But the president soon discovered that Ron Paul has an untwistable arm. He cannot be moved. Speaker at this time, was giving instructions to all the Republicans, telling them in the usual fashion, good things are going to happen to you if you vote with us on this horrible spending bill. Bad things will happen to you if you don't. He's instructing them, he's telling them it's a three-line whip. So when English comes from English parliamentary practice, it's the most threatening kind of thing you can get as a member of parliament. They triple underline the fact that you have to vote either yes or no on this bill. So he said, everybody, you know, nobody can dissent on this. Everybody is set to go. And then he says, of course, Ron Paul. I don't mean Ron Paul. So Gingrich was upset, but of course I thought that was a nice tribute. Indeed, he couldn't get Ron Paul. All these wonderful votes of 430-odd to one have been a huge teaching process. You know, if it's 398 to 22, nobody pays attention. But if there's one person who's saying, no, we all want to know, who is that and why did he do it? So it's taught even some of the congressmen. One recently, what happened after the great fundraising success in the presidential election, congressmen would all come up to him and say, you know, how did you do that? What was the firm you hired? What special trick? Right? It's inconceivable to them that the people would actually spontaneously rise up and support a man like him. So this late congressman was asking him this question. He was too polite to point to the board where it was one of these votes, 432 to 1. You know, that's the reason. That's the reason that people have supported him so gradually. Of course, he never had power in the House. He could have been, by this time, been a big-time committee chairman. He could have been one of the barons of the Republican Party when they were in power, giving out the contracts, getting who knows what in return, being depressed, being feted everywhere, being considered a great guy. He wouldn't do it. He proceeded carefully, quietly, on the same path, never varied, never went through either the ditch on either side, stayed on the path that he started out with, the path of liberty. His concerns about our civil liberties, about our economic liberties, about peace, against war. It was Joe Sobrin who said, conservatives dislike big government unless it's killing people. Well, Ron has had a great effect in teaching people about what kind of a government program war is, why it's not a good thing, especially, of course, for the dead.
That's right.
When he first ran, he promised he would terminate himself, I'm sorry to say. But, of course, man of his word. So he decided, after the three terms that he said he was going to run were up, he was going to quit the House, and that's when Senator John Tower of Texas, was killed in a plane crash. And so Ron decided he was going to run for the Senate. And the White House was very unhappy about that. And Phil Graham, they wanted to be the senator, and they pushed him, and they were very nasty to Ron. There was even a break-in of Ron's office where important papers were stolen. Some famous people in the Republican Party involved in that guy you sometimes see on television, people who work for President Bush. And because that's the kind of people they are. Ronald Reagan came out against Ron, the whole Republican establishment went against him, but he campaigned all over Texas, and his goal was that he did not win the election, of course. But patiently, one step by step, educating people. Then he was out of office. He decided starting a business of practice again when he was in the coin business, in the precious metals business with Langford Lumber. I'd say a man who was a Ron Paul in that business. Ron thought it was important for all of us to have some gold and silver to protect ourselves. Then in 1988, he decided to run for the Libertarian presidential nomination. About that, again, educated a lot of people. Even I think Bill Buckley was educated, much against his will. I remember one TV appearance. If you've seen the Morton Downey movie on YouTube, where Ron is on, again, when you see him there, and I can tell you when I first met him in 1975 at a Libertarian conference, we were talking about healthcare and what was going to be ahead for us as patients in the future if we allowed the government to continue like this, because he was exactly right. And he teaches exactly the same things that he taught then, based on Austrian economics, on libertarianism, on his very, very deep reading of economics. He is an economist. I mean, he doesn't have his doctorates in medicine, obviously, rather than economics. But just as he's a great historian, a great foreign policy analyst, he's a wonderful economist. He always built up a large mailing list. In those days, we thought the mailing list was just unbelievably huge and difficult to handle. I think we had 75,000 people. Paper mailing list, that was the difference. Now it's 400,000. 1994 saw an opening in the 14th district, this district, and the Republican, the longtime Democratic congressman, was bribed by the Republicans to become a Republican. And so Ron challenged him in the primary, and you had every creep in the Republican Party in the 14th district campaigning against Ron, from Newt Gingrich to George W. Bush to George H.W. Bush to, I guess they would have had Greenspan if it brought him in. They had every creep, partly because they can't smear him. You know, they ran ads against him that he was against the drug war, that many wanted to sell heroin to schoolgirls. You don't have to see Ron Paul on the screen or know anything to realize, you know, it's just a lie. So the lies didn't work, but quite wonderfully he was elected. This has been elected since. Again, he's a backbencher. He could be, even under the Democrats, he could be very powerful. But that would necessitate the normal practice of, I'll vote for your pork barrel project, you vote for mine. I'll vote for your scam, your unconstitutional bill, you vote for mine, I'll vote for yours. And of course, another thing, when he was up there originally, many other Republican congressmen would literally laugh when he would say, you know, my first consideration is this bill constitutional? They just thought it was a joke. I mean, it was like this guy from the 18th century. Well, he's built his army. And boy, we saw it during the presidential campaign. He taught millions of people, especially young people. And all of us know about his audit the Fed bill, which is going gangbusters in Washington. His great book, Hope is Next Bestseller, and the Fed. Until they had already ordered copies to be shipped to them at the Fed. Bernanke staying up late at night reading this book of horror. So, you know, when we look at what they're doing in Washington, when we look at Obama's health care, although my own guess is it's going down, and much of the great to be in this mob. You know, the important thing to remember, and this is when Jesse Benton talked about why it's so important, not only political, in addition to political activism for Ron, more important is the educational work. And that's because everything is determined by the climate of ideas. Ideas are more powerful than armies, as Jesus said. If We just look at what's happened, for example, with this health care bill. A couple of months ago, they were an arrogant bunch of guys as normal. Sure, they were going to shove this down our throats with no opposition, had majority in the full House of Congress. Didn't happen. What happened? People changed their minds. I think the American polling indicate this. The American middle class woke up and said, holy smokes, this is going to make things much tougher for me and for my parents and for my children. And they're going to do that so that in order they can do better for the illegal immigrants and the welfare bonds and similar people. This is all, as I hate to quote Joe the Plumber, but he was right. And he predicted the Obama administration to be about redistribution. And of course, that's fundamentally what it is about. And the medical business is redistributionism. So middle-class Americans woke up and they don't want it. And you know, all that is required is a change in the climate of opinion. Early libertarian theorist Murray Rothbard writes about him, Eddie and Bill of Weddings. Hundreds of years ago in France, David Hume wrote about this, Mises, Rothbard, and many, many others. Government depends on the consent of the governed, even a dictatorship. They have to have our tacit consent. Basically, by the way, take a look at BOETIE on Rockwell.com. You'll find Murray's essay about this, and also the Wedding essay. Everything depends on the consent of the governed because they're parasites. They're a bunch of fleas on the dog of the people, is the way I understand it. It can be scratched off. And there have been instances throughout history when there have been governments that have almost dried up like leaves and blown away because people changed their minds. It happened in 18th century America. It's happened in other countries. It can happen again. And there have been a number of instances recently where popular opinion changed and government was forced to go along. The government seems like an impenetrable fortress, stone walls a mile high, vast troops and secret police and the FBI and the IRS and EPA and the, you know, the whole CPS and the whole alphabet from hell located. But they're not. They're actually fundamentally weak. By the way, they're aware of their weakness. They know that this is why the constant search for legitimacy. This is why there are public schools. It's why in the public schools, in the universities, in the media, government itself spends so much time telling you they're just wonderful. Now you people in the private sector, you're a sad bunch. You know, you're interested in your family, you're interested in your future. Thank goodness we have the government that are interested only in the common good, the national good, the national defense, all the rest of the cause. But of course the government is not only not interested in those things, it's interested in its own interest, it's interested in its power, its money, and its glory. Some of them even like killing people, by the way. And they are another interest. And being a libertarian, being around policy, means that you understand that they're not about the public interest. There's only one Ron Paul, and maybe there's ever only been one Ron Paul in all of American political history. It seems to me he's a unique figure. And future historians are going to look back on Ron Paul and see one of the important men of the West.
Here, here.
You know, when you look on what he's done, you look at the people he's converted, you look at the army he's built, you look at the slow, steady steps that he's taken towards teaching people, he is changing the climate of opinion. This is very threatening to the regime. They don't like it, and they don't like it because it's so effective.
Absolutely.
I see it especially with the Fed. I've been interested in the Fed ever since I was a teenager. I can tell you, nobody was interested in the Fed. An ego issue, right? Sleep. Because the name may be on the bill in your pocket, that was about it. I tried to tell you. You're being ripped off. How come that's not interesting? I had no effect. Ron Paul had that effect. The teaching about Austrian business cycle theory, teaching about the nature of the giant counterfeiter we call the Federal Reserve, and talking about the recessions and depressions, what's happened to the average American standard of living, which has not gone up in so many years. By the way, not in real terms gone up ever since Nixon ended the final tide of gold and these guys got their total discretionary monetary policy. So Ron Paul, step by step, staying on that same path, has awakened alarming. And we're seeing it with this Fed bill. More and more Americans are interested in the Fed. There was a great article in Forbes, I say great from a different standpoint than the authors. He said, we need to make the Federal Reserve more in demand. He said, it's dangerous if people are interested in the Fed. These great minds can't meet by themselves and decide what's best for the country, set interest rates, set monetary policy. And then they have to worry about the people. Well, darn right. So I think never again are people going to find the Fed boring. They're understanding its history. I think Ron's book is going to be a major impetus towards this. And the Fed, we know the chant. That's why he gave it that name, because he heard that chant on this campaign trail. And I'll end with one of my favorite moments in the campaign. It was a rally at the University of Michigan after the Dearborn debate, where of course he was treated badly as he was treated in every debate. Yet, did that stop him? Straight ahead, right going, step by step, marching, going. So there were 4,000 kids in the quadrangle of the University of Michigan in a very liberal school. Kids said that they'd never heard of a congressman or even a presidential candidate getting that many kids out. So Ron is speaking to them, he's speaking to them about free market, about government spending, about deficits, about taxes. Everyone's applauding, talking about foreign policy, about why wars of aggression in Iraq and other places that are so damaging to liberty and morality, and speaking of stacked up corpses. And then he started to talk about monetary policy. And spontaneously, kids started chanting, end the Fed, end the Fed. And it was like a, you know, with the chills up and down your back. And some of them started lighting dollar bills, pulled them out of their head. Saying, Mr. Bernanke, this is for you. So Ron was startled, obviously very pleased, but you know, we should have known. We should have known that all these decades of work, 7 days a week, never stopping, morning, noon, and night, teaching, building on the work of the great Austrian economists, creating an army of millions, an army of peace, an army of education, an army that changed the climate of opinion in this country. We have very exciting times ahead of us for freedom, and that's all thanks to Dr. Ron Paul.
Listening to The Lou Rockwell Show. Produced by LouRockwell.com, the best-read libertarian website in the world. If you'd like to advertise on this podcast or on the website, email advertise@LouRockwell.com. And thanks for listening.